Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Operations Manager at CRA Resources. And today, we are sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest, Brian Dempster. Brian is Vice President of Global Clinical Management at Axiom Real-Time Metrics. Thank you so much, Brian, for joining us. And before we get started, make sure to visit craresources.com/blog to catch up on our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered to your inbox. So I'll turn it over to Angela, and she can give us more details on our topic today.
But I do have to tease Brian, the first male guest on our podcast on International Women's Day. I just got to say it.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
So what I want to talk about today, this actually came about because Becky's was corresponding. And of course, we all of you guys that follow us know that we correspond a lot about candidate fraudulence, inclusion of candidates for the right reasons, but also being able to arm our hiring managers within this industry, checklist of things that they can do to make sure that they're protecting themselves, because fraudulence is a huge epidemic in our industry right now, especially in the CRA role. And Becky was actually corresponding with Brian about one of the topics that we had. And Brian had some really good points as it relates to how fraudulent CRAs can sometimes slip through interviews. So I'm wondering, I'm going to put you on the spot and then we can kind of dig into it. But Brian, you had some really good points and I loved them. And I thought maybe our audience would like to hear what your thoughts are as well.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much, Angela. This came about, actually, the timing of it was perfect. I always enjoy Becky's emails coming through on topics that are relevant to the industry and pertinent to that time. And this one came about just after I'd had dinner with a long-term colleague and friend in the industry. They were actually, or we were talking about CRAs and the introduction of managers into the industry that haven't had experience of CRAs, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I don't want to start by making out that, you know, the only way into being a project manager in the research industry is by being a CRA first. But certainly our recollection was that when we started in the industry I can't believe I'm saying this, but some 30 years ago, that was because it doesn't feel like 30 years. And then some days it does. It feels
a
like
lot more.
Much more. Yeah, that's exactly right. But when we started in the industry back in the sort of mid 90s, the only way into senior positions in the industry and project management roles in the industry was to have CRA experience. It was an absolute prerequisite. And that's obviously no longer the case for all kinds of reasons that we'll probably talk about on this podcast. But we wondered, on the basis of that, had we lost some intrinsic value in not looking for CRA experience in project managers? And one of the things that we were actually talking to was the ability to spot fraudulent candidates as CRAs. Because if you've been a CRA, you've been a clinical monitor out in the field, then you can ask really probing questions in an interview about someone's experience that only somebody with that requisite experience would be able to answer. And so when we saw Becky's email, we were saying, you know, the fraud that is created by people posting fraudulent CVs, but then not having the experience to back it up, would be negated by people who are able to tease out those you know, specifics in an interview.
I absolutely agree with you. And you know, my first reaction whenever I saw, because Becky shared your email, and I'm like, oh, I love this man. And I will tell you, some of the biggest disasters of companies that we have supported in the past were when they were small to medium sized companies and all of their management had not had the previous boots on the ground experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this wonderful product. Let's go get it through clinical research, and no experience at the site level, no experience at the monitoring level. And they're just going to design something and get it through, you know, but they don't want to, they either can't pay for a CRO because they don't have the money, or they don't want to. And then they go to try to manage their projects themselves. And I've never seen it successful, because those boots on the ground, that foundational knowledge, is critically important. And again, like you, I mean, I want to tread lightly here. I'm not going on record to say you should never be a manager if you've never been a CRA. But I think there has to be some things that happen in order to make you effective. There was a blog post this week by a gentleman who is a key leader at Advanced Clinical, which is one of our competitors. And the ACRP asked me to kind of add and write a sideboard to it. And one of the things that he mentioned that I absolutely agree with is, if you're interviewing CRAs and you don't understand the role, get a subject matter expert to help you build a list of questions to ask. Okay, that's great. But so now I'm asking these questions and I'm getting answers. How do I know if the answers are correct, right? So, yeah. But it can be to where you've got an HR partner, because HR partners, they're interviewing everybody in your company. How do they know what a CRA does versus an IT person versus a, you know, whatever? Same thing with third-party recruiters or operations managers who've never had the boots on the ground. And I think in all cases, it's not necessarily wrong to do it that way, but you have to do things to shore that up, don't you, Brian?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think both of those points are really well made. So you have to have subject matter experts. This comes back to really everything in our industry. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. you have to have specific expertise for specific mm-hmm. issues that arise, and trying to have a one size fits all to every role or a one size fits all to every problem never works. That's why mm-hmm. you have to have that breadth of not just experience, but breadth of knowledge, of training, of competencies as well. And so in the example you give there, you're absolutely right. You know, you have to have that experience in knowing what questions to ask, but you also have to know how to discern the answers that are coming back,
exactly.
and how to interpret the answers coming back as well. So you know, when we interview, for example, when we interview CRAs, and we're very lucky in that we have our directors are also previous CRAs for the most part, not in all cases for the most part, but we do have that ability within our group to have directors who've been CRAs and myself as well, for that matter. And when we do have those questions where we say, look, ask these specific questions of the candidate, and it's normally for the screening process, we also give sample answers as well. So we say, you know, if the answer doesn't contain this information, then it's probably a candidate that we want to screen out, because there are certain things that we ask the question in such a way that it, you know, we're leading a candidate with the requisite knowledge and experience. If they don't answer the question as we expect them to, then either, you know, they don't have the experience that they think they have or they claim to have in fraudulent cases, or if they do and they're not picking up on why we're asking the question, we probably don't want to hire them anyway. They're probably
not intuitive enough.
Absolutely. So you're exactly right in that, you know, it's not just about, you know, really, really specific experience. It's about breadth of experience, which the CRA, which I think kind of leads into the conversation we were having about why was it beneficial to have CRA experience as we were coming through the industry. And again, not to suggest it's the only path, and we also thought about reasons why it was a detriment, because it is no one, you know, there's no one size fits all here.
Sure.
But we thought about why it isn't, and one of the reasons, and actually it was picked up on an earlier CRA Resources podcast as well that I was listening to this week in preparation for coming on here.
He's been doing his homework. I am impressed.
I wanted to know what I was letting myself in for, but I think the Becoming a CRA podcast talked about the importance of soft skills,
sure.
as a CRA, not just about the knowledge you have to have, the clinical knowledge you have to have and the scientific knowledge you have to have, but also the ability to present, the ability to influence people, the ability to collaborate with people, even in situations where they are less than openly collaborative to begin with. All of these things are, you know, really, really valuable skills to have as a CRA, and honestly, things that you learn as a CRA really quickly if you're going to go on to be successful as a CRA. But they're also transferable skills that you can take through to the rest of your career as well. You know, the ability to deal with a study coordinator who's under pressure and not inclined to do things exactly as you want, but is necessitated to do things as you're advising, is a really good skill when you're later on down the line working with somebody, you know, a data manager who is in the same situation, or a regulatory specialist, or anybody else, or another clinical project manager for that matter.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's you know, we looked at why that was beneficial, but one of the other things that then led to was, is it detrimental? And especially as things have moved on, because the landscape for a CRA is not what it was 30 years ago. I have to be very careful now as a 50 something year old man not to look back and kind of say, you know, oh, it was so much better in the 90s. It was, well, music was, but maybe being a CRA. But you know, you have to be really careful that not everything is rose tinted glasses. And you think, you know, one of the things that, again, we were looking at from a perspective of what's a detriment is this. Back in the 90s, when I started, you were doing NCR forms, you know, CRFs. Now everything is EDC, and it's trificate. You remember that the sound of the paper being ripped off the page was the sound of success. You know, my job. And when you consider the way things have moved with the advent of EDC and ePro and other electronics, you know, we've become much more efficient in that setting. It's beneficial to have project managers who don't necessarily have just CRA experience coming through and think about the flow of data as a linear. We were taught that's how, you know, we were taught in that generation, you know, the data is a linear flow all the way. It starts with the you know, the source and the coordinator copy into EDC, and it goes through data management and so on, so monitoring and data management and so on and so forth. It is no longer that way. Data is not collected in a linear fashion in the way it was, and if you take the approach that it is, you're likely to miss important data verification steps and data comparison steps. So it's, I take a great deal of benefit from having project managers who haven't been CRAs as well, because they're able to say, you know, you have to look at it from this perspective. So again, that speaks to the importance of balance in a team. Yeah, and diversity in the team. Absolutely. Yeah. And again, that loops into back to what you were just saying a moment ago, Angela, where you have to have this diversity where you can have people, you can have a range of questions, and you can have one person asking the questions and one person receiving the answers. But if you don't have that diversity in your team to have other questions fed in and the important aspects of the answers that are going to come back, you're going to get more of the same, and you're going to open yourself up to fraud, because you're not going to have that breath to spot spot the fraudsters.
That's exactly right, because you're surface, aren't you? And mm-hmm. and I think that back to your initial point, that you have to be able to tease these areas out. I like to call it poking, you know, the to poke areas, you know, and being able to really dig into, okay, well, tell me about that project and what were some of the endpoints, and tell me about the challenges, and, you know, if they've never worked the project and they're just regurgitating something that they were, that they purchased in their package, if you will, or have been taught to interview. The other flip side too is okay, so if we were to put the fraudulent CRAs to the side, and then we just discuss the mediocre or the poor performers. And by the way, the mediocre CRAs scare the bejesus out of me too, right? Yeah. Because you never know what you're going to get, if you're going to get the good Angela or the bad Angela of the day, you know, but you know, even whenever you start dealing with that, I worry today, and you can tell me this because, you know, obviously, we've both been around for a while, but, you know, when I first started sitting in this chair in 2008, the CRAs that we work with were the soup to nuts CRAs. You know, they mm-hmm. were the one-stop shop for that site. And to your point, I mean, you planned to go to the site, you pre-monitored, you knew what you were walking into, you had your checklist, the site knew exactly what you were looking for, they had your patient records pulled, you were all set and ready to go. Now I worry or wonder, and I'll call it a worry, even though I don't know why I would call it a worry, but it's still a concern that we are so siloed in some of our larger organizations now that the CRA doesn't have the opportunity to see the big picture. They're told to get in, do this checklist, and get out, right? You got remote monitors that are doing different things. You got other people that are sending confirmation letters and follow-up letters and other people that are doing this, that, or the other. And they're doing this little tiny sliver compared yes. to what we were doing in the back. How do you think that impacts what's going on in our industry?
Oh, hugely and negatively. You're absolutely right. Because, and again, this not to hark on days gone by, but again, to draw on my own experience, I can tell you that when I was trained as a CRA, and I can still recall my mentor saying to me, don't start with the CRF, start with the patient. Mm-hmm. Notes, start with the source and build up a picture of the patient you're about to verify the data for. So you would mm-hmm. you would spend often the first hour or two of any monitoring visit just looking at a patient source from soup to nuts in you know your words, and you built up a profile of that patient. And so that when you then went to verify data points in the CRF, rather than kind of playing a game of spot the difference, can I find this and this, you would also notice if there were inconsistencies within mm-hmm. that CRF that you otherwise wouldn't do. You may be looking at, you know, something on vital signs, and then you might say, oh, well, do you know, when I was reading about the patient's concomitant medications earlier in the note, I noticed that there was a medication here that would affect that, and therefore, you know, this may or may not be an AE for that reason, and you could spot things like adverse events that otherwise would be missed. True. And the other really important piece of that process of starting with the patient notes and doing that kind of patient profile exercise was that it taught you as a clinical researcher, regardless of whether you're a CRA, a project manager, a regulatory specialist, or any of the other, you know, wonderful roles that we do in the industry, it taught you as a clinical researcher to put the patient first. That mm-hmm. this data wasn't just data points on a piece of paper or in a computer screen.
An aggregated amount of data somewhere up in a trend. And
mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not just a bunch of numbers, so, you know, somewhere on a spreadsheet. It's a real person. There's a real person's story behind this. And as a CRA, we were in a really privileged position to see that because we had the patient's notes and we were doing that profile and we saw the patients as real people. But that translated all the way through the process beyond. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. And the best research is done. It sounds somewhat naive to say this, I think, but I absolutely believe this to be true. The best research is done when you absolutely apply that research to real people and you consider mm-hmm. that there are real patients involved in this, real people with real families and real issues that they want to be resolved through the through the benefits of your research, and that translates all the way through the process. That piece was really important as well in terms of what you were saying a moment ago about the breadth, you know. Mm-hmm. We lose that connection with the patients at our peril as researchers. And I think, again, that's something that we have to find other ways to feed into the industry as the industry changes. Mm-hmm. As people become more specific in their, or narrow, it's not even specific, right? As narrow in the jobs that they have to do.
Very siloed.
Very mm-hmm. siloed, exactly. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way as industry leaders to come back and say, okay, let's just take a step back and look at what you're doing from, you know, a broader perspective, so that you're aware of how this impacts the patients and consequently how it impacts your colleagues that are working in their streams alongside you as well. And that grows collaboration as well. So I think you make a really important point there that as we become more you know, more expert in particular areas, we mm-hmm. have a duty to make sure that that expertise isn't gained at the cost of being aware of what's going on in the wider spectrum.
It's a balance, isn't it? Because, you know, my Lean and Six Sigma background would say, let's chunk it up as much as we can as points in the process. But the mm-hmm. more points in the process you have, the more failure points in a process that you have. And
exactly.
when you have blinders on and you're only seeing one bit, to your point, you don't understand what's going on upstream or downstream, across stream, whatever kind of stream you're looking at, because you don't yeah. know what you're looking at impacts other things or other people. And yeah. I think that's where some of the fraudulence is so horrifying to me, and why we're speaking out about it so greatly, because the patient is the point. This is the mm-hmm. reason why we're here. And I think there has to be a balance on how do you drive efficiency into your clinical trials process without losing the human aspect of it, because the patient is the human that we should care the most about. And if we have people slipping through our process because they're fraudulent, they obviously don't care about the patients. They can't.
Exactly.
There's
exactly.
no way.
Yeah, that is everything we've talked about in a nutshell right there. You know, it's mm-hmm. Do we put the patients first? If you're not putting the patient first in everything you do, mm-hmm. then you're starting off from a shaky foundation.
Exactly.
You're just starting off from the wrong point. And like any, you know, any other construction that starts from a shaky foundation, it's not gonna last. It's yeah. not gonna have any quality. And so you're absolutely right in what you say there. And again, I think, you know, I can speak from my own experience, and obviously my bias as a CRA, if you like, because I still describe myself now as a frustrated CRA. You know, that's what I started in the industry, and everything else I do is just taking me further away from actually doing the monitoring, which is, you know, the thing I love, kind of thing. Oh. But you're absolutely right. I look at the grounding I had as a CRA, and I still maintain it's not the only way to get this breadth of experience, and it's not the only way to get this breadth of understanding of what we're doing, and it's not the only way to, you know, create that philosophy of patient first. Of course, mm-hmm. it's not the only way, but it is a great way. And so, you know, it stands as an example to people coming into the industry who haven't been CRAs as a way to acquire these skills, as the type of skills you want to acquire in order mm-hmm. to be a good clinical researcher. And I think if you have been a CRA, if you're coming into the industry, I still maintain, even in the environment that we're in now, with all of the great advancements we've made in things like EDC and ePro, all of those things, I think being a CRA, going out with a CRA, actually going and, you know, I call it the smell test. You know, do you know what the inside of a hospital smells like? If you're a clinical researcher and you don't know that, and those listening who know what I'm doing will be saying right now, yes, I know exactly what you mean by the smell of a hospital. If you're a clinical researcher and you don't, then my advice is become someone who does. Go out with a CRA. Go out with a sales rep. Go out with anybody who is actually at the coal face of clinical research, yeah. who's actually it standing in the footsteps of the patients.
Agreed.
And see what goes on in that area, because it will, I guarantee you, that day out of the office, that couple of hours going to a site and seeing what's going on, that will give you benefit beyond the time that you invested in doing it.
That's really true. Yeah. So number one advice that you would give, whether it's an HR partner, a third party recruiter that doesn't have an expertise in the field, or even a manager that is now managing CRAs but has never done CRA work themselves, what would be your number one recommendation for them whenever it comes to interviewing and identifying high quality talent versus underperformers, mediocre performers, or fraudulence?
That's great. So we've already said it. Speak to someone who mm-hmm. already has the hands-on experience of that. Ask them what questions are going to give them the most insight into this person's experience and the quality of their experience. And then, and you hit the nail on the head earlier with this, Andrea, and then find out what the expected answers,
the right answers
to
are.
That. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, in fact, what are the key points that that person is going to know to address when they're asked that question? if you don't have the answers to your point, it's a waste of time asking the questions if you don't know how to assess what is a quality answer on them.
Yeah, and sometimes the follow-up questions are helpful. You know, sometimes when we do our screening calls with candidates, potential candidates, and we ask them questions, we've got an if-then kind of scenario sometimes. Mm-hmm. If this question is a little lacking in this answer, whatnot, then ask this to dig even deeper. Yeah. So if this question isn't fully satisfied, keep digging, keep going on this train of thought. And then if it seems like they're weak in this area, jump to this area. You know, it's kind of like a tree of if this, then that. And that might be helpful to even continue to dig until you can find the bottom of their competency.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. The other thing too is if you've got a candidate that's kind of borderline, you know, there's a lot of things that you liked about the candidates, but there were a couple things that kind of made your gut turn just a smidge, not enough to rule the candidate out. But when you check references, you know, use the reference opportunity to say, hey, Brian, tell me about Angela. How did she do with such and such and such and such and such and such? And have the manager either put your fears to rest, or alternatively, we've got a guy now that's going through our process and he's got his tenure's a little bit less than, I mean, it's not bad enough to rule him out of our pool, but, you know, I just outright asked his manager, tell me about his tenure.
Yeah.
You know?
You're exactly right. And that also makes me think of a commonality that all CRAs have, whether they've been on the job, 20 years or 2 months. Every CRA has some level of amusing story where something went wrong and they had to deal with it. We all look, we get together in a bar at the end of a conference, right? It's the thing of, let me tell you what happened to me this time. Everyone's got their favorite CRA anecdote. And I think that's a great, you know, I say this slightly tongue in cheek, but there is a serious point to this, that if you say to someone in an interview, you know, can you tell me a time when something went wrong for you and how you fixed that? And if the answer comes back and it's relatively dry and it's like, well, I had this data point that did this, and you kind of go, I'm not so sure that person's going to have the necessary soft skills for your CRA. If they start out with, well, you know, there was this one time when.
Let me tell you a story.
let me tell you. And it's kind of like, it may go a little bit far to say, if, you know, if they don't make you laugh, then they probably haven't been a CRA with enough experience.
Or because, they take it too seriously and everybody hates them when they come onto the site.
That's right. You know, every CRA has that kind of anecdote in their back pocket that says, you know, oh, it could only happen to a CRA.
Right.
I mean, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but with a serious point, you know, you get to the end of an interview and you say to them, you know, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? And, you know, obviously you want them to be professional. You want them to tell the anecdote in a professional manner. But as I say, again, CRAs of quality have that, they have that in, you know, that ability and that intrinsic quality to be able to communicate in that way, and they'll all have that anecdote in their back pocket that they can tell you.
Yeah, well, they're used to being able to go onto the site and having to bridge and build that relationship right away, so they have the quick stories and they have the quick wit, and they look at things in a way to where, you know, it can make other people laugh or at least put them at ease. I mean, how else can you be, from my view, how else can you be that resource to the site while holding the site's feet to the fire without being able to balance that?
That's exactly right. It's that, again, it's that, you know, do you have that ability to bring a personal touch, a human touch to the job that you do? It's an important quality that all CRAs have, and I think it's an important quality that we all benefit from in the fast-paced environment of clinical research.
I agree.
Oh, Brian, I don't know if it's your accent or the wealth of knowledge that you have, but I could listen to you all day.
We'll go with accents, I think.
I really, really appreciate you joining us today. I'm so sorry that we're out of time, because I want to keep talking about this. There's so much more we could do. So maybe a part two or another visit. We would really appreciate
it. Yeah, for sure.
It's been my absolute pleasure, and thank you for asking me. I think your podcasts are really, really great, honestly. I think they're tremendous amounts of knowledge to mine in them. So it's been my absolute pleasure to be part of it.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Angela, for joining us today as well. Thanks to everybody out there listening at CRA Resources. We understand you have so many options when it comes to selecting which clinical recruiting company to partner with. Not only do we take pride in working with the highest quality CRAs and site managers, we also only work with quality pharmas, biotechs, medical device companies, and CROs who recognize the importance and value of a CRA's role. So feel free to reach out at CRAresources.com for more information about our firm, and we cannot wait to work with you.